to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this morning is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Bob McCoy. I'm Leanne Dofano. We have two cases set for oral submission on the 9 o'clock docket. Then we'll recess, and then we'll hear the 10:30 docket. I understand everybody has announced for the 10 o'clock docket, so we'll call the first case. Excuse me, for the 9 o'clock docket.
And may it please the court, as announced, I am John Gladich, and I represent Sam and Cynthia Shipley. And what I'd like to address today is what would appear to be, best my research can show, a case of factual first impression, where a courthouse piece of machinery malfunctions and prevents a jury from seeing evidence that actually was admitted. Now, while that would appear to be a case of factual first impression, it occurs to me that the harm analysis to be given that, what should a court, reviewing court, do when it receives evidence or when there is evidence that a jury in a jury room can't see evidence that was admitted? And I was struggling, actually, to figure out, okay, what rule should we develop? But it seems to me the rule is already developed. In Texas law, it's very clear that where a trial court, erroneously excludes evidence, where a jury should hear it, there is already a standard that is set. And it seems to me the same, or at least extremely similar, standards should apply when a jury is back in the jury room, and for some reason, be it, you know, fit the definition of an outside influence or other standards in Rule 327, how should a court look at that? And it would seem to me to be essentially the same as when a court of appeal makes the determination that evidence should have been admitted. And we begin there. And what's the next analysis is to see, would it probably result in a different verdict? There's not a but-for standard that we need to show, but the reviewing court is to look at everything. In the case to say you started voir dire and go all the way through the record to the very end and take a look at the evidence that was not admitted.
So we're treating it as evidence that was admitted for the record, but not before the jury.
Your Honor, I think that that's the standard that should apply, and conceptually just...
Was it shown in the courtroom at all?
Yes, it was. So I guess one step...
You saw it in the courtroom.
There was some of it shown in the courtroom, yes. Some of the DVD video was shown in the courtroom. So I guess the next thing, and that's where I thought, is perhaps it's even a closer case to where evidence is admitted or a jury sees it, and then it's stricken. So when the jury goes back to do its job to deliberate the evidence, it's told, don't consider this evidence that you saw some of. And of course, we don't ask the jury to fill out a verdict form right when the evidence is done. We ask in our judicial systems across the country to go back and deliberate, consider the evidence.
And the jury asked for that piece of evidence?
Well, the best that we have is that the jury tried to put those discs in. They wanted to see it in deliberation is really the only conclusion that I think that can be drawn, Your Honor, is they put both discs in trying to see this evidence.
Did they send a note saying we can't see the DVD?
No, they did not.
Then how do we know they tried to look at it?
Because the jury testified that they tried at the hearing for the new trial. They testified that they tried to put this disc in. And, of course, we're confined, and rightfully so, to not get into the minds and hearts of the jury. But we do have a situation where there was evidence that was the trial court decided was admissible and should be admitted and was admitted that the jury wanted to see and couldn't see.
Okay. The problem that I'm having is what evidence do you have or what arguments do you have that that this failure to be able to view these two DVDs was calculated to cause or probably did cause a rendition of an improper judgment?
Well, there is why I say the analysis, Your Honor, should be the same analysis that the Court of Appeal must do or reviewing court must do when evidence is not admitted or if it's stricken. But more often you find the cases like the McCraw case or Reliance Steel case, Texas Supreme Court cases, that say it's to the sound discretion of the reviewing court to consider the evidence that the jury didn't get to see and start from beginning to end and come up with your sound discretion, the reviewing court.
Then how do you get around TRAP 44.1, reversible error in civil cases, that says that we can't reverse unless we conclude that the error probably caused a rendition of an improper judgment?
I'm not getting around it. 44.1, Your Honor, is cited, and actually there is a recent case that goes into that from the Supreme Court that I informed counsel of yesterday. I didn't have time to get to the court, but the Supreme Court of Texas in the state of Texas versus Central Expressway Sign Associates, and it's 302 Southwest 3rd, 866, addresses the same sort of harm analysis test. Is Rule 44.1 follows the McCraw and Reliance Steel line of cases from the Supreme Court. McCraw is a 1992 decision, 828 Southwest 2nd, 756. And therein lies the difficulty. But the appellate court is the one who must look at this evidence, consider the evidence that the jury did not get to see, and then analyze from beginning to end, was it central to some issue?
But the jury did see it.
The jury saw it.
The jury saw it in the courtroom.
Right, Your Honor. But again, we don't ask juries to fill out forms, verdict forms or charges at the conclusion of evidence. A very important and a critical time of jury analysis is during deliberation, where they can sit and deliberate as a group.
But I'm just not following your harm analysis, because the jury did see it, and the jury was never instructed not to consider it.
No, there was no instruction not to consider it, but what I'm trying to find is something other than the Logan case, where we have a malfunctioning bailiff, as I put it, right, who didn't, the jury in that case heard the evidence but wanted to hear it again. So here, you're right, they heard or saw some of the evidence. Whether they all paid attention to it, whether they collectively understood it, whether they would discuss it differently in deliberation is what I suggest the rule should be if it happens again, and hopefully it never does, where a court system fails due to an electrical problem to allow the jury to do its job, to consider the evidence, to what it was charged to.
So your answer to my other question is that really there's nothing in the record that this failure to be able to view this DVD was calculated to cause or probably did cause a rendition of an improper judgment?
Actually, no. I think there's several things in the record. Considered in the record would be the declaration or affidavit of the juror, while not evidence at the new trial standard, for sure, absolutely not, is in the record. The other issue that's in the record that I think why the harm analysis for the wrongful exclusion of evidence or wrongful striking of evidence, either one should apply, is this standard that the Court of Appeal, then the burden falls on the Court of Appeal, the reviewing
but
court to review.
Even in the trial court, you argued that the standard was a motion for new trial based on jury misconduct, right? And that standard requires calculated cause and probably did cause rendition of an improper judgment.
Your Honor, that standard is very close to the harm analysis that I'm suggesting here. It's the language is almost very similar. What I started with is there is no other case that can be found where this exact fact pattern happened. And the closest is Logan, that I could find where a jury wanted to see something and couldn't. And so I'm trying to come up with a rule of how do you handle a situation in this time of modern technology where a lot more evidence does come in by DVD or electronically, what should a reviewing court do?
So do we treat it as testimony, in which case the jury has to send a note saying that they are in disagreement and need the testimony read back? Or do we treat it as some kind of demonstrative or physical evidence? And then are they absolutely entitled to handle the demonstrative or physical evidence, or...
I think the way to treat it, Your Honor, is this, and there's no one definite rule, just as in the harm analysis for evidence that's not admitted. We can't come up with a definite rule. And I think the way to treat it is, once again, for the reviewing court and its sound discretion to look at what the evidence was and consider it. Was it crucial to an issue that was in the case? Was the case so one-sided that it doesn't matter? The standard that's set forth in McCraw and has been followed by this court for evidence, I think there shouldn't be a different standard. Hopefully
well,
I'm being clear.
Well, to do what you want us to do, we've got to know, one, whether the jury saw the entire DVD in the courtroom or only portions of it, and apparently the record doesn't reflect that. We've got to know whether the entire DVD was admitted into evidence or only portions of it. If it was in evidence and they only got to see a portion of it in the courtroom, then that may be different than if they did see the entire thing in the courtroom and didn't say they were in disagreement.
Your Honor, we do have in the record that the entire DVD, and I think the critical DVD, I truly think, my opinion, the critical DVD is the one showing the human interaction. Exhibit 35 is the defendant's experts interacting with this machine. At the heart of it, we step back. This was a design defect case with human interaction with a ladder system and this maneuver that can be done to whack or hit the doors to close them quickly. Those were crucial issues in the case. And those DVDs, and we actually, there's no objection to admission because the plaintiff liked what it saw on those videos, that a foot can get caught behind there, and you can see the human interaction with the machine, and you can see this maneuver that Mr. Shipley, the evidence is, wasn't shown how to perform. That was there for the jury to see, and those were crucial issues at the trial. So while I agree, we can look through the examination of the experts, Mr. Brass, of what was done, or what the jury saw on some of the DVD. And that would be a hard thing to put on the record for a court of appeal at all. Did they see the entire DVD or some of it, unless someone is speaking and saying that's all of it? But we know the entire DVD was admitted, and we know that they did put it in to the machine. So I think the rule that should come from this, if it ever does happen again, that a jury is prevented from seeing evidence it's trying to see, and indeed there to consider all the evidence back in the jury room. So how do we liken it? Other than Logan. I mean, again, Logan is something they heard the testimony. Now, in the other question is, so testimony is given in court. It's evidence just like any other evidence. And I think to answer your question more directly, do you treat it as testimony or hard evidence or physical evidence? It's all evidence. And we don't sit and ask the jurors of the 12 jurors that have voted, how many of you were really paying close attention during all of the testimony?
No, but if you're going to get testimony, I mean, the court reporter's not going to read back the entire trial. You've got to say that you're in dispute and know what you're in dispute over, and otherwise you don't get testimony. And that's one of the ways that can help us resolve this problem is, do we treat it as testimony or do we treat it as physical evidence?
Yes, sir.
You know, we can't deal into the mind of the jury. You'll agree with that?
I agree, Your Honor.
So, you know, standing on the outside, if the jury thought that this evidence was so crucial that it might have made a difference in the outcome of the case, one would think they would have brought it to the attention of the bailiff or the judge that they couldn't view this videotape. But we can't go into their minds, and so we don't know why they didn't bring it to the attention of the judge, or we don't know why they didn't review certain evidence, or they didn't ask for certain exhibits, or ask for other documents. So I don't see how we can attempt to go into their mind and say, this was such crucial evidence. This evidence was so crucial, it would have had effect on their mind and hence on the outcome of the case had they been able to see it, when they themselves didn't go to the trouble to bring it to the attention of the bailiff or the court that they wanted to see it.
Your Honor, I exactly agree with you, which is why the McCraw test and the test that I'm advocating you should is that it's to the entrusted determination of that to the sound discretion of the reviewing court. That's why I say, hopefully I'm being clear, that it should be the same standard as when a jury doesn't get evidence, or if it does get it, but then it's stricken. Because you can't, I agree, you can't, the judge can't get into the mind of the jury. So that's why the standard here, I think, should be the same. It's up to the reviewing court and its sound discretion to look at everything. And it's not,
but
the cases are,
I'm sorry. Isn't it really a Rule 281 issue, which says that the jury may and on request shall take with them in their retirement any written evidence?
Well, I think the issue, they were given this evidence. So I agree, they were given this evidence, and so they were told to look at all the evidence and consider it. And in this case, we happen to know that they tried, and we happen to know that the system failed them, the DVD
okay,
failed
let
them.
Let me ask you this, too, because really the jury had two choices. They could either believe that Mr. Shipley's foot got lodged behind the top rung of the ladder, or they could believe the defense theory that he jumped, and that when he jumped, his right foot hit downward, and that's what caused his injuries. So there were two kind of opposite alternative theories of how the injury occurred. And so how can we say that, I mean, the evidence that his foot got caught behind the rung was before the jury, whether they viewed the DVD or not, and the evidence that he jumped was before the jury whether they viewed the DVD or not. And so given the nature of the competing theories, it's hard to see how the failure to view these DVDs was calculated to cause and probably did cause rendition of an improper judgment. In other words, I think it would be a closer case if one side said it got caught behind the top rung and the other side said no, it got caught behind the second rung, or something more like that, where they were more similar theories. But to find that he jumped, they had to totally reject that he touched the ladder at all. And to find that he touched the ladder, they had to. So there were two polar opposite theories. So I'm having a hard time seeing how my hang-up is a calculated cause and probably did cause rendition of an improper judgment.
Thank you. May I have the time to
yes,
respond?
Yes, please.
Thank you. First thing, as with Justice McCoy, when you begin your question, I'm having a hard time with the jury's thinking. We're often the wrong standard, respectfully. It's going to fall upon the court, the reviewing court, to look and see what the impact of this was, is what I believe the standard is and must be, one. But two, the jury did not find that he jumped. That would be speculative. The questions that were asked were not, did he jump? It was disputed whether a foot could inadvertently get back into that gap area. That was a huge dispute. There was expert testimony on both sides. The evidence that they did not get to see because of the malfunction shows that a foot can get back there. And indeed, I'm sure as the court's requested, is watch, your whole leg can go down. It's something they could see. Now, in the courtroom, I got to demonstrate some of that. So at least they got to see that, admittedly. But they, you know, asked to see the machine. They wanted to walk up and down on it and do those things. So, again, but we can't get into the mind. Here I'm falling myself into that trap of getting into mind of why the jury wanted to do what it did. We just know there was evidence they didn't get to see, and it was disputed. There were many more issues than did he jump. It could be, although Mr. Shipley's recollection was, he took a step down and reached down for his next step. Granted, there was evidence that he fell. There was evidence that he jumped. There was expert analysis that, you know, I've addressed in my brief that whether he jumped and whether that's reliable. But there were more issues than just did he jump. Maybe he put that foot down and put it there and then jumped. So it's both true. But the issue here is the design defect.
But the DVDs were he got his foot caught behind the top rung.
His right foot, without a doubt, that his right foot went into that gap area and came to rest on the brace such that he thought that he was on the step. And the DVDs show the jury in the only three-dimensional, it's not cumulative, the only three-dimensional images of how that can be done and that it can be done for the jury to consider in the jury room deliberating. It was an important time of the trial, is from the DVD that wasn't there. So, again, to find that the jury found that Mr. Shipley jumped, I mean, they found he wasn't negligent. Did they find that jumping would be the right thing? Did they find that he actually did what he said, but that the...
Well, they rejected that his foot got caught behind the rung.
Well, actually, we can't read that necessarily into the verdict either. They found that the machine was not defectively designed. Perhaps they found that there was no safer alternative design. Perhaps, you know, many things. We really can't go to that level of determination.
Well, in the event they based their verdict on any of those theories, then the DVD wouldn't matter anyway.
But I think the DVD does matter because you've pointed out that it was a very hotly contested case about, and not just the jumping, is what you pointed out, but what I bring out, is whether the design, whether a foot could get caught, whether, you know, how easily that can happen, whether it could inadvertently be done. So hopefully, if I answered your question, I know I'm beyond my time.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Joanne Story.
All right, if the jury had asked to see an exhibit and the trial judge had said, no, you can't take the exhibit back into the jury room, how should we handle that?
If the jury had sent out a note
saying, we want to see Defense Exhibit 4, photographs. And the judge said no.
I would hope that one of the parties would object to the court's instruction to the jury that they would not be permitted to view evidence that was admitted or view an exhibit that was not admitted into evidence, which would preserve the error on appeal in that instance that the trial court abused its discretion in refusing the jury's request. And of course, the rules specifically provide for the jury to tell the court that it has a disagreement over what the evidence is and they would like to see the evidence. So I think that's how that probably would be handled at trial. I'm going to limit my remarks to the harm analysis, just as the plaintiffs have addressed in their oral argument. I think the very first thing that we need to make clear is that when this court looks, first thing we need to make clear, we do not know. There is nothing whatsoever in the record at all what DVDs or CDs it was that the jury supposedly wanted to consider during their deliberations. In fact, when two of the jurors were asked during the hearing on the motion for new trial, Kathy O'Dell and Mr. Benson were specifically asked to identify which CDs or DVDs it was that they wanted to see. They could not identify those. That's the first thing.
How many DVDs and CDs were in evidence?
Four.
Thank you.
And if the court were to look at the court reporter's index of all of the exhibits, including, and I'll tell the court what four those are, including those four CDs or DVDs, and then go to the page in the record where they were admitted, you can see what they were, how they were demonstrated to the jury, and which party it was that introduced that particular piece of evidence. But those four DVDs or CDs are Exhibit 35, which is characterized by the court reporter as the DVD brass. And if you look in the record, you will see that it was used by defense counsel to demonstrate persons mounting and dismounting a ladder. And as an aside, I'm sure the court knows from the record, there were four ladders that were introduced into evidence in this case, including the ladder from Mr. Shipley's machine, including the black ladder that the plaintiffs used to argue that there was an alternative, safer alternative design, and then two other ladders that the jury got to see. And the court will note in my brief, I've given the court the places in the record where the parties, and particularly the plaintiffs, used those ladders to demonstrate to the jury what they thought happened. So the DVD brass, which is Exhibit 35, shows persons mounting and dismounting. Exhibit 1 is a CD, and that is an animation that the plaintiff's attorney showed to the jury during closing argument. You'll find that at page 35 and 36 in volume 12 of the reporter's record. Exhibit 642 is a video of Mr. Shipley driving his tractor. That's a DVD. And then Exhibit 645 consists of a CD of x-rays of Mr. Shipley's injuries. So as we explain in our brief on the harm analysis, because we don't have anything in the record, and the court has already pointed that out today in the remarks during the plaintiff's attorney's opening remarks, because we don't have anything in the record, the plaintiffs engage in speculation to try and convince this court that the trial court erred in denying the motion for new trial. And in their remarks this morning, the harm analysis that they engage in, they want to use cases where the court erroneously admitted evidence or excluded evidence. But I think that we're, with all due respect to the plaintiffs, I think we're getting off track, because all this court has to do to determine how to engage in the harm analysis is to look at what the Supreme Court said in the Farrow case. And that's the Farrow case, which is it's P-H-A-R-O versus Chambers County. It's cited by both parties in their briefs. But what the, because the courts, especially the Texas Supreme Court in Golden Eagle, all recognize that any statement by a juror concerning matters that occurred during deliberations is not evidence of outside influence. What the court in Farrow says or suggests is that in to determine the harm, how you would engage in your harm analysis is that you can infer a tainted verdict caused by jury misconduct where the evidence on the merits so heavily favors the complaining party. That's what the court said in Farrow. It said that it didn't have that situation in present in that case. Justice Walker, in your questions of the plaintiff's counsel this morning, you raised the issue that in this case we had completely opposing views of what happened to Mr. Shipley when he encountered that massive swarm of bees. We don't have a case, let me back up, we have a case where 18 witnesses testified. The case was tried for 6 days. It was ably and zealously tried by both of the parties. The jury got to see Mr. Shipley's machine in the sally port. It got to see those four ladders in the courtroom and the parties demonstrating the use of those ladders to show the various their various theories. It was hotly contested as to how Mr. Shipley was injured when he encountered that massive bee attack. There was, in my opinion, overwhelming evidence from the medical records where Mr. Shipley told medical care providers that he jumped when he encountered that massive swarm of bees. But the point is, Justice Walker, you said this case involves a case where the issue was hotly contested. The jury heard evidence from both sides and rendered its verdict, and I do disagree with plaintiff's counsel. I think that jury's verdict reasonably reflects that the jury reasonably found that Mr. Shipley jumped. But the point is that when you look at Farrow, this is simply not a case where to determine whether there was any harm in the trial courts in the in associated with any jury misconduct, which we or not haven't even touched that issue. But this is not a case where the evidence so heavily favors the complaining party that you can infer, reasonably infer,
when did,
that there's a tainted verdict.
Does the record reflect when the problem was first brought to the attention of the trial judge?
In the motion for new trial.
Not until motion for new trial.
Yes. Now, I will tell you this, Your Honor. Ms. Wisend, Peggy Wisend, she's the court coordinator. She testified, and of course we know that outside persons can testify. She testified that the issue of the malfunctioning DVD and the electrical problems in the jury deliberation room were first brought to her attention by plaintiff's counsel a number of days after the jury had returned its verdict. I think the record reflects that the verdict was returned on February 26th, and she got a phone call from plaintiff's counsel on March 5th. I think those are the dates.
So would your position be any different if the jury, at the time they were unable to view the DVD, had sent out a note to the trial judge saying, we want to see the DVD, we can't, the machine's not working, get us a machine that works, and he'd said no?
And he would have said no?
Yeah.
Well, I think that would be contrary to what he actually said.
Would your position be different if that had been the circumstance?
Again, I would have to fall back on relying on the trial lawyers to object to the trial court's failure to accommodate the jury's request, particularly in this case where the judge said he would have done that if he had been advised that there was a problem. But going back to your question, Your Honor, I think that in order to preserve error in that instance and to show that the trial court abused its discretion.
So you wouldn't think there's any difference if it had been called to the trial court's attention during the trial and he'd refused to allow the jury the equipment they needed?
A different harm analysis?
A different position on your part.
In this case, you're taking the position there's no error and there's no harm. In that case, you'd be taking the position there was error and there's no harm. I mean, your position is there's no harm. That's the bottom line of what you're telling us.
Absolutely.
From your standpoint.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And it, yes, I took me a minute to put myself in the position of where I would be if the trial court refused the jury's request.
So here there's no action by the trial court that was error.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. And we haven't even gotten into what I believe would be a slippery slope if we even considered the notion that we know that the jury wanted to see those DVDs. We know that the jury had a malfunctioning DVD player. We don't know any of those things unless we impermissibly consider statements that the jury made during its deliberations. And we know from the Supreme Court's opinion in the Golden Eagle case that the court specifically said that juror statements about matters occurring during deliberations are not evidence of outside influence. And so we don't have a record in this case, we don't have evidence in this case that allows this court to determine that an outside influence occurred to begin with. But if we did, there certainly is no harm if you use the analysis that the Faro court used, that is, that the evidence is so one-sided that the only reasonable inference you can draw is that the verdict resulted from it was tainted by the jury misconduct. Does the court have any further questions?
Do you think that this is more properly a Rule 281 complaint?
Can the court refresh my recollection?
Yes, Rule 281 says that the jury may and on request shall take with them in their retirement any written evidence. And the Supreme Court has interpreted that rule as being self-operative and requires no request from jurors or counsel, and has also interpreted it as being mandatory. And so I don't think it really, it still applies the same harm analysis, which is calculated to cause and probably did cause rendition of an improper verdict. But it seems to me that that's really more what this case is. It's not really jury misconduct. It's that it's the same as if an exhibit was not sent to the jury room with them, which is 281.
Of course, the record in this, there's nothing in the record to indicate that the jury didn't get all of the exhibits. We certainly know that all of these DVD CDs, the jury saw those during the evidentiary portion of the trial. And so we have to engage in an impermissible inquiry into the jury's testimony about matters that occurred during deliberations and create a new test for harm in order to find that the trial court abused its discretion in this case.
You know, rather interestingly, although we always sent all the exhibits to the jury room, of course, if you read the rules on their face, there's no provision to send non-written exhibits to the jury. There's no provision to send a DVD or a ladder or anything else. The rule speaks in terms of written evidence will go to the jury. Just an aside, has nothing to do with today.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Is there a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
So a couple things I think we differ on, and that is what we do know and what is permissible for a jury to testify about. Cases are very clear that when they're called in on a motion for new trial about alleging juror misconduct or outside influence, most definitely can and indeed must testify to what the outside influence was. So I think to the extent that counsel suggests that the jury's not allowed to testify to, you know, what the outside influence was and, you know, what happened, I believe that she is misreading that in the case. Now, I absolutely agree that neither this court nor the trial court nor us can get into the minds of the jurors. Some of the things that are in the affidavit there, from the affidavits from the jurors, were not asked at the trial court level, and properly so, because it's getting into the mind. So I think that always a jury can testify about what the outside influence was. With regard to an issue that how many DVDs were in evidence or issues, Exhibit 1 was demonstrative. It never went to the jury, and it was an animation. It wasn't supported enough by evidence as an animation to get into evidence, and I doubt it ever would be, but the court allowed it during closing as a demonstrative tool, because one thing that couldn't be shown to the jury by myself or anyone else going up and down the ladders on an exemplar, and perhaps not clear, there was a 5-foot-high just exemplar to which these ladders were affixed in the courtroom, such that counsel and I and witnesses could walk up and down the ladders, and it was an exact height replica of the huge machine that was back in the Sallyport. So the ladders that went in, the 4 ladders, were removed from this exemplar. We didn't give the jury the ability to put their foot in the back and perhaps fall or hurt themselves. We're not. That wasn't something they were allowed, and probably rightfully so.
Counsel, I thought Exhibit 1 was the DVD that you thought the jury should have been able to consider.
No, Your Honor. I think Exhibit 35, there are only 2 DVDs that actually went to the jury room, is Exhibit 35, which was the defense experts going up and down, and then Exhibit 645, which were the records from Harris Methodist on a DVD, on a CD, if you will. Exhibit 642 was admitted, and it was Mr. Shipley driving the tractor for about 6 minutes, was not played, but it was not him going up and down a ladder. And as a matter of fact, it never got to the jury. It was my error. We had to exclude certain parts that were on that DVD, and we never got that done by the time, you know, the case was submitted to the jury.
So you're saying the records from Harris were on DVD, and the jury was never able to look at those?
They weren't able to look at. There were some printed records, Your Honor, but all the CT scans and things were on this disc that was 645. And the jury puts in 2. We know they put in 2, and they're allowed to testify to that, and they did. Put in 2. How many more? And they didn't work. How many more do you have to put in before you find out that the court-supplied system didn't work?
So you're saying that the two that they put in had to have been 35 and 645?
Absolutely. They were the only two that were back there in the jury room with them. And even if somehow 642 got there, which it shouldn't have, because the one the court had, and I'm not even sure they had it, included another gentleman going up and down a newer version of the ladder that had the black ladder, but it wasn't black, and it was was excluded as a subsequent remedial measure. So that's what needed to be taken care of. So there were only two. So there were, we clearly know that they did that. And again,
okay,
not again.
So 35 is the DVD brass, and that shows experts for the defense mounting and dismounting the ladder facing away from the cab.
Yes, facing towards it, away
right.
from it, foot
right.
going
so
back.
That doesn't help you because that shows defense counsel trying to jiggle their foot back in the gap and being unable to do so.
You watched it.
Right?
But yes, it does help us because what it shows is jiggle foot or not, the foot goes back there. And the other thing it shows, we're losing track of a bit, is another issue in the case was this maneuver of being able to hit the doors close quickly. That's also only on that DVD. And that is an issue in the case that they were unable to see. So I think the harm analysis here, when a jury did ask to see this, they asked the court-supplied DVD player. I'm playing some word games, perhaps, but that's how they would get to see it, is
okay,
put it in a player.
Exhibit 645, the DVD or CD with the x-rays on it, weren't many similar photographs and x-rays and diagrams introduced through experts during trial, separate and apart from this exhibit?
Not many, Your Honor. There were certain prints of x-rays, and if you go through the record, you'll see the experts themselves said they were less than helpful because you print it out, you lose resolution, you lose things. So even the defense expert, Mr. Scott, said it was critical to look at the information that was on the disc and be able to manipulate it and see exactly where the lines were. But yes, Your Honor, there were printouts of x-rays and CT scans.
Do you know if that DVD would even play on a DVD machine?
You know, I would put it in mine to see if it would, and it comes up, and you can manipulate it a little bit.
It looks like it's maybe more for a computer.
For a computer, I agree. It required some, in order to be able to get to everything on it, required some analysis. That's why, because there were other printouts of the fractures, right? I think if I were to get in the mind of the juror, that would probably be, or if I were sitting on the panel having to decide that disc probably cause a problem, I would be less inclined to say yes, quite honestly, than because the case is about this machine-human interaction with it. Can a foot get back there? You know, how you close the doors? Everything, everything about the event was on Exhibit 35. Everything in three-dimensional. And that we know...
Can you wrap it up, please?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't notice. So, Your Honors, thank you. Hopefully I've asked your
yes,
question,
thank you.
Answered your question, and you know we do seek the reversal and new trial, and our brief, I think, it handles the other issues before the court. And thank you. Thank you for the additional time.
Thank you. Appreciate your argument. Your case is submitted, and you're excused to go about your business or to stay in the courtroom and watch the next argument if you'd like.
Thank you.